Are you ready?
Go. Let's go.
Now circling in the neutral zone.
Here's the pitch on the way. 36 yards for the win.
This.
Here comes a big chance. The shot.
Is this the dagger? The neutral zone.
Oh, score!
Oh, my God!
This is as good as it gets.
The neutral zone is brought to you by the Ontario Para Network. Follow them online at onpara.ca.
Now, here's your host, two-time Paralympian, Brock Richardson.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Neutral Zone. What's going on? I am indeed your host, Brock Richardson. That was a bit weird because I started a bit abnormal from what I normally do, and it was like, wait, this is weird. But that's how we're gonna start this. And that's how that went. Coming up on today's show, I was recently at the 2024 Canadian Paralympic Summit, where we had the opportunity to interview 8 athletes from various sports. Today, we unveil one of those interviews. The NHL playoffs are underway. The panel will give you a preview and their thoughts on the early action of the playoffs. I am joined by Josh Watson and Claire Buchanan. Here come your headlines.
Neutral Zone headlines.
A huge congratulations goes out to Wheelchair Basketball Canada as both their men's and women's teams both qualified for the Paris 2024 Paralympic Games recently. This is huge for both teams and the organization as they look to have their first podium visit in quite some time. So we are looking forward to what the summer brings for wheelchair basketball here in Canada.
It was recently announced that the CBC unveiled their broadcast team for the 2024 Olympic and Paralympic Games in Paris. I don't think this will come as a surprise to many of you out there who follow the Olympic and Paralympic coverage. Scott Russell will be the front man of this, and Devin Haru will be his sidekick for all intents and purposes, and he will be on the sidelines in Paris during this broadcast. We do know that the Olympic broadcast will be 22 hours a day, and we know that according to their press release from a while ago, CBC says that the Paralympic coverage will be more than ever before. Well, the highest they've been to is 20 hours per a Paralympic game, so we would assume that it's going to be more than 20 hours. Newsflash, we also will have Devin Haru join the program next week, so stay tuned for that.
Jonte Porter of the Toronto Raptors, brother of Denver Nuggets star Michael Porter Jr., has received a lifetime ban from the NBA for gambling. In a statement, the league said, a league investigation found that Porter violated league rules by disclosing confidential information to sports bettors, limiting his own participation in one or more games for betting purposes, and betting on NBA games. I don't even know where we begin with this particular story. I had never heard of Jonte Porter until this story broke. One way or the other, gambling on your own sport is bad enough, but gambling when you involve yourself and change your play in order to affect your bets is pretty much inexcusable. Lifetime ban, good riddance, goodbye.
Before we close off the headlines portion of this show, first of all, I want to give Claire an opportunity to say her piece on Jonte Porter, if you have any. Claire, what say you?
My response is pretty similar to Joshua's. I did not know who this individual was and who this player was, but no matter what pro sport we have seen betting happen inside, there's been a lifetime ban for that individual. So good on the NBA for kind of still setting that standard and sending a message. That's really what it is. It's sending a message of this is absolutely not allowed, and we don't accept this. And so, it turned out the way it should. And I guess we hope that it doesn't happen again, but that's just one of the things that happens in sports. But Yeah, I'm just glad the NBA has its own protocols and follows suit with the other pro sports.
Well, and at least now a precedent has been set. So if somebody else does happen to be this stupid, at least there will be a precedent in place to say, okay, well, you did the same thing, so guess what? You get the same punishment.
Yeah, I think, Josh, you said it quite perfectly. Good riddance. And that's the way that I would have put it myself if I had the headlines. It's good riddance. And who I feel bad for is his brother. His brother is obviously blood. And I don't mean to say that, you know, tongue in cheek. I just mean it in the general sense. And because of that, and he's in the NBA and plays for the Denver Nuggets, as Josh alluded to there as well, I just worry about the media. What's the media going to say? Are they going to, you know, bug him about it here, there, and everywhere? He's been a little bit, a lot, just sort of like, I don't want to talk about this kind of deal. I'm not interested, which seems to be. But you know when the national media gets involved in playoffs and they're not involved with the Denver Nuggets, you know that, you know, the general media is going to poke and prod. And it's just something that I look at it and say, Jonte, you're a selfish. The word I want to use is not the word I'm going to use on the podcast, but you're a selfish jerk. because to not value your sport in such a way like that is it just, I don't know. It bugs me. It really, really does. Because of this conversation, I thought that I would bring a topic to the table before we get into our Parasport interview for the day and then chat segment. Is there something that in your life, whether sports related or otherwise, that you are grateful for and thus you wouldn't do something like this to risk it? Claire, go first on this one.
I mean, my teammates. The respect that I have for my teammates and the respect that they have for me. Yeah, that's something I would never want to put my teammates through. You did it and it's on you and you're going to face the consequences. But it, something like that, especially when we're talking about someone like an NBA player who's in the media, just that attention and that kind of like black cloud, it spreads throughout the entire team. And it's hard to face. So I wouldn't want to do that to my teammates. But again, I think we spoke about this topic, a couple of weeks ago, and we touched on just like at that level, you work so hard because you love the sport. Why get to that level after doing all of that work just to throw it away like that? So it's mind boggling because if you're that good to make it into the NBA, why disrespect this sport that you put so much time into?
Yeah, I think that's probably the closest in terms of gratitude. That's what I would be grateful for as well, is the opportunity to play on a team like that, and grateful for a chance to play a sport for a living. In my particular case, I'm very much a rules person. Like I believe that the rules of the game are the rules of the game, and basketball is one of those sports where I know fouls are subjective, but it drives me crazy watching, because what is a foul to this referee here is not a foul to that referee over there. And it drives me crazy. So then to see someone who just takes the whole integrity of the sport and just says, oh, this doesn't matter to me. I'm going to place some bets and I'm going to make myself rich by controlling how much I play. It's just selfish. It's wrong. And if he got anything less than a lifetime ban, I'd have been shocked.
Yeah, I mean, I look at, I'll use this platform as the neutral zone. And I look at this and I say, yeah, we all have a platform that we can, you know, be blessed to sit and say what we need to say and say what we feel like we need to say, but there is a line to which you need to stop yourself and say, is this that line? And there was a word I wanted to use for Jonte Porter, and it's not a terrible word, but it was enough that I thought to myself, not gonna risk that line. Why? Because I value what I have built for this platform, what Claire has built for this platform, what Josh has built for this platform, what Cameron has built for this platform, what others have built. And so for me, the weight is heavy enough, and I don't mean heavy as in a negative. I mean heavy as in, do you really want to throw this away because of something you may want to say or do or whatever? And like for me, like the money that NBA players make or professional players make, like this is money that I will never see, never understand, never. And even the guys that are on the lowest end of the contracts, like, that's money in and of itself that I'm like, how can you just make that and say, I'm just going to push this over there and that's it. Like, for me, there's just things that you need to value, and you need to step back and say, you're representing an organization, whether it's a podcast sponsorship, whether it's a franchise, whatever it is. I've seen you both do some nodding here. I'm going to start with Claire because I think you both have something to add, but I'll start with Claire on this one. Thoughts?
Yeah, you saying that we're always representing these platforms and these things that we're connected to. That's something that my coach has directly said to us. When you get on the national team or any high-level sports like that or any kind of sports, you get taught that off the field, outside of the locker room, in your quote unquote other part of your life, you're still representing Canada, or you're still representing this entity, and you have to make sure that what you do outside of that space is still representing and showing the same values that you have in this other space. And they go hand in hand. They're never really separate.
Yeah, absolutely. From the time I joined Cruiser Sports for the first time, the very first thing that's impressed upon you is whether you are wearing the sweater or not, you are representing this club, and you are expected to act in a way that is representative of this club. And we are not necessarily a high level organization like a Team Canada or anything else, but we are still known in the community. And so we then have a responsibility to our club and to the sponsors of our club to act in a way that is integral to our sport and to ourselves. And to see this and see someone just throw this away as if it doesn't matter, it is quite shocking, really. I mean, there have been other sports where gamblers have existed. I mean, Pete Rose is a great example in baseball. He's been banned for life from baseball because of betting, and he didn't even bet on his own team. He just bet on the sport. So the NBA has, I think it's 30 teams,
yeah,
32 30. Teams, something like that. 30 teams. And there's only so many spots on each team. And this guy had one of those spots. And to not value that, even if you're only playing 5 minutes a game, that's still 5 minutes a game on one of the 30 best basketball teams in the world, presumably. Because that's what the NBA is. It's supposed to be the best of the best. And to just throw that away is astonishing. It's just astonishing.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go back to last week, and I sometimes like to do this, pull back the curtain situation. We talked about Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter, and I didn't deliver the text message section of the conversation as cleanly as I wanted to. And so in the moment, live and in the moment, I was like, okay, let's go back and do this again, because I didn't deliver it in the way that I wanted to. And I had a conversation with our technical producer, Mark Afuola, who does a wonderful job at our podcast every week. And, you know, I said to him, can you clean that up, you know, for me a bit, just to, you know, make it a bit cleaner than how I stumbled upon it at first. And he came back to me and he said, but Brock, you cleaned it up yourself. You cleaned it up the way that you wanted to in the moment. And so trusting yourself and realizing, yeah, did I get that done as cleanly as I wanted to? Maybe I did, maybe I didn't. But did you go back and clean that up? You did, and it's fine, and it didn't require me to come in and clean it up for you, because you are a professional. You know how to clean up the mess. Even look at the top of the show. I came out of the top of the show and it was like, whoa, this doesn't feel good because I normally started this way. Broadcasters are creatures of habit, and if you don't start something the way that you normally would, you just kind of go, whoa. And then I made fun of myself and we got back on the rails where we should be. But I think it's trusting yourself. And the part that bothers me is you didn't even have the decency to realize what you're doing and to step back and go, this is a position of privilege. This is a position that I should respect. And the cleaning up doesn't mean what I meant by cleaning up, it wasn't that I wanted Mark to save me. It was that I respected the product enough to say, look, I didn't do that as well as I could have. Can you help me? And he said, there's no need to help. But in this case with Jonte Porter, you go, yeah, man, there's a lot of need for help, because betting on sports when you're an athlete is a real, real problem here. And I just think the lack of respect for your own sport is astonishing, to be perfectly honest with both of you and the audience out there. If you want to get a hold of us on social media, here's how you can do that.
And welcome back to the Neutral Zone broadcast booth.
Play ball!
We're set to get this bowl game underway. The first pitch is brought to you by Brock Richardson's X account at Neutral Zone BR.
Strike!
First pitch and a strike. Hey, gang, why not strike up a chat with Claire Buchanan from the Neutral Zone? Find her on X at Neutral Zone CB. There's a swing of the chopper out to second base, right at Claire as she picks up the ball, throws it over to the first base for a routine play.
Out!
And fans, there's nothing routine about connecting with Cam and Josh from the Neutral Zone at Neutral Zone Cam J and at J Watson 200. And the Neutral Zone is brought to you by the Ontario Para Network. Connect with them at ON Para Network. Follow them online at onpara.ca. Now that's a winning combination.
I had the privilege of going to the Canadian Paralympic Committee Media Summit, which happens once before the Pan Am Games every year and once before the Paralympic Games. And we had the opportunity to do that this year, and we're going to release our first interview. Please enjoy this right now.
My name is Travis Morrow. I'm from Richmond, BC, and I play wheelchair rugby.
Travis, let's start here. Parapan Ams, you guys basically, can I say, rolled through the competition until we hit the United States. And obviously the deal with the United States was win, we move on, or we move to Paris. And if we don't, we go to this last chance tournament. Looking back on this event, now that there's been time away, how do we take positives from that, even though there was a one-track goal from it?
That's a great question, because it's tough. You know, obviously, I've been playing a long time, so I've had my fair share of heartbreaks, but Santiago was a tough one, a tough loss for us, especially because, like you said, we've been cruising, playing really strong, really consistent rugby, and to fall short in a gold medal game was tough, but like you said, it's a lot of it is about focusing on all the positives heading forward and seeing where we fell short in that gold medal game and making the necessary changes and adaptations moving forward. But it's also good to know that we're right there. Like, we're so close. We had a silver medal in the World Cup recently, silver in Santiago. So it's just about finishing off with a win.
And so now that the Santiago is in the rearview mirror, we've taken what we need to. What are those things that we need to see from your team to get where we want to go to with Paris right around the corner?
I think, we've taken a good look at a couple of our gold medal performances, and we've highlighted some key areas for improvement. I mean, I don't want to give away all our secrets, but
right.
Speaking generally, I think big moments in gold medal games, athletes have a tendency to try and do too much. You know, they think, oh, this is it. This is my opportunity to really make a play for the team. And it's coming from a great place, but when you get a bunch of guys all trying to make a play, you know, it doesn't always make for the most cohesive game plan. So I think a lot of our gold medal preparation is going to be sticking to our game plans and drilling in, you know, all of the necessary things we do to get to that gold medal game and keeping them up.
And so as we head into this last chance tournament, I don't want to say objective, but what do you have to do to qualify for Paris? Like, is it a gold medal finish? Is it a podium? What is the deal?
So the top three teams at the qualifier will get the Paralympic berth. So it's a podium finish. We need to finish in the top three at this tournament. So what that means for us, like logistically, is we need to come through pool play in the top crossover and win a crossover game, basically.
And so with your finishes, as of recently, you're feeling pretty confident headed in?
Yeah, I'm really confident headed in. You know, obviously we don't take anything for granted, and we prepare for every team, the same way and with the same amount of respect. But yeah, we're coming into New Zealand pretty confident with the squad that we have and with our goals.
How do you, because obviously there's, you know, if we don't do what we're setting out to do, the end result is pretty clear. How do we manage the quote-unquote pressure that may be felt?
I mean, I think pressure is something that athletes feel in very different ways. I know because I'm an older athlete, it's changed throughout my career where, I hate to say it, but when I was younger, I really didn't feel it. Where, you know, big competition or not, I was young, I didn't know what was at stake. I thought I'd have a million shots at it throughout a long career. And now that I realize that time is short and Paris may be our last shot at a medal for this core group of players, I'm actually feeling some of that pressure. So it's really helpful for me to understand what's not at stake with these games, because sometimes it can feel like your whole world is that gold medal, and if you don't get it, your life just is over and comes crashing down. But it's really helpful to know that, hey, win or lose, you know, my wife is still there. She's still going to think I'm cool. My friends and family, a lot of times they don't even know that I'm competing, so they could care less if I win or not. So it's helpful to have that background and that support system in place.
You know, people used to tell me all the time when I would compete in boccia, people would say, you know, the sun does rise tomorrow, and it always has.
Yeah, but those people don't quite get it, you know? It's like, yeah, the sun's up, but I hate it.
Yeah, no, and I mean, it's tough, right, to hear people say, oh, the sun will rise tomorrow, because it is so... It's so simplistic sounding, but it's so true in essence of like, and I love what you said about, you know, family and friends still think I'm cool, and hopefully your wife would love you regardless anyways, because, you know, that would be challenging if not, but it is really something. Travis, you've been around the team for a while. How do you take what I assume would be a leadership role, and you talked about this as being guys trying to make plays that maybe doesn't really help the team in that big shot, the big play moment. How do you help mentor some of the guys that may need that?
Yeah, I think especially as I get older, it's such an important role for me personally on the team, just because I've had so many great mentors in the past to kind of guide me through high performance culture and what that means, and especially those big game moments where, you know, very fortunately I've been able to have a front row seat and watch some of the best guys to ever do it in Canada. guys like Garrett Hickling and Ian Chan and Dave Wilsey, and just watch how they approach a big game and how they play within themselves, strictly to their role and get the job done. And I really tried to emulate that with my playing style. And it's something I share with the young guys moving forward, where I'm like, listen, I know this is a big game and you want to put your footprint on it and make an impact and make a big play and be the hero, but a lot of times you doing that is just you doing your job, and that's going to allow us to achieve success.
You made mention that this is the last sort of go around, in your opinion, with the core group of guys. What's the future of wheelchair rugby beyond that core group of guys? Where are we in how the program would move forward?
So right now, we're very fortunate to have some young talent on the team. That's very exciting. You know, we've got some young guys in their early 20s who are really defining their roles on the team and really coming into themselves as athletes. So in my, you know, from my perspective, the future's bright. And, you know, I would love to leave the program in a better space than when I came into it. So I have the hope that these athletes are going to continue to develop and maybe take on mentorship roles for athletes in the future. And Rugby Canada will thrive for years to come. That's the dream.
Maybe these are kind of comments you hear from people and you kind of go, that's their opinion and I don't really care. But rugby can kind of be that sport where everybody goes, oh, it's so dangerous and it's so crash bang and it's so this and it's so that. What would you say to the person that hears that goes, that's the reason I'm going to stay away from wheelchair rugby, because of somebody that, quite frankly, may think they see what they see on the outside watching it, but not really understanding the intricacies of the game that exists in wheelchair rugby?
Yeah, I would say to give it a chance, because like you said, appearances can be one thing, but the reality can be something different, where it can look intimidating and daunting. But once you're in a game playing, you realize that the chairs are absorbing most of those impact from those crashes and bangs. And really, it's a technical, tactical game like any other. And, you know, it's super fun and super enjoyable. And I think it's for everybody.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, I've always loved wheelchair rugby. It's something when you walk into a room and a gym and you smell the burning rubber, and
it definitely draws your attention.
It's very cool, and I love it. And so as we get closer to the end of today, as we're at the Paralympic Summit, how important is a day like today for you personally?
Yeah, for me personally, I think this is a great opportunity to kind of promote the Paralympic movement and our sport, and also a chance for us to kind of get our stories out there and share what makes us unique and interesting to kind of the broader world out there who maybe isn't familiar with Paralympic sports and doesn't know some of our stories. Because that's one thing that struck me about competing in the Paralympics was all the other athletes that I met. Each one of them has got just such an incredible story of what they've had to come through and do to get there. So I think if I can do anything to promote the Paralympic movement, I'm happy to.
What would be your favorite sport aside from wheelchair rugby? Like when you go to the Paralympic Games, you say, I got to check out this sport. What could be?
Oh, man. There's a lot. So initially, it was watching my friends compete. So Marco and Bocce, watching him play Bocce, and PD Isherwood playing table tennis, and goalball and wheelchair basketball. But I gotta say, now I've become a fan of like a lot of sports. Blind judo is one that kind of comes under the radar a little bit, but have you ever seen blind judo?
I have.
It's pretty cool. So I did judo as a child. So watching it now, you know, and understanding the technical aspects of the sport and what they're doing out there, it's a hit for me.
You brought up one of my old teammates, Marco. And let's talk about Marco for a little bit, because I know Marco was in the sphere for wheelchair rugby for a long time. And yep. One of the things he often used to tell me when we'd compete is, when I heard about Bocce, it was like, who wants to do that? And now he's successful at it. Did you, as a friend, colleague of the sport, teammate if he was one, did you ever think Marco would calm down enough to be so successful in Boccia?
So I would say when I originally met Marco, no. But he's grown up a lot over the past few years. Past two decades now I've known him, which is crazy. But initially, no. But I think as he grew to understand bocce as a sport, he realized, oh, okay, this is a sport that I can get passionate about, that I can love, that I can compete at, that I can bring my training to, like, that I've learned through rugby, that I can transfer some of these skills. And I think that's when he really, really got excited and enthused about bocce.
Yeah, I mean, transitioning sports is tough as it is, but transitioning from a very physical game to a very calm and intricate
cerebral
game can
game.
Be very, very tough.
And so that's why my hat's off to Marco, where I've seen athletes in the past transfer sports, like you said, from, you know, kind of physical sport to physical sport, like basketball to rugby is not the same jump as rugby to bocce, where it's a completely different mindset and skill set that you've got to hone and work on. And he put the time in and he put the work in, and to see the success he's achieved in both sports is a credit to him.
Awesome. Thank you so much for doing this, and best of luck qualifying for Paris.
Thank you.
The Neutral Zone is brought to you by the Ontario Para Network. Connect with them at ON Para Network. Follow them online at onpara.ca.
So, sometimes in our show, we add topics to the table because our group comes to each other and we say, let's chat about this. And Josh brought a topic to the table and he wanted to chat about a specific topic. So Josh, I'm going to hand this over to you and you can deliver this to the audience and the panel.
All right. So this week, as we've been watching, Caitlin Clark, who just finished up her time with the Iowa Hawkeyes women's college basketball program, was drafted into the WNBA, and she was drafted by the Indiana Fever first overall. During her introductory press conference with the team, a reporter by the name of Greg Doyle, who works for the Indianapolis Star, was offered the opportunity to ask her a question and began by making a heart emoji sign with his hands. This is something that Caitlin did after every game to her family up in the crowd. And for some reason, this reporter thought it would be appropriate to do this to her before asking his question. I thought we should discuss this because, number one, I don't know what this man was thinking. Number two, I question how appropriate it is. And number three, I wonder, is this a respect for women's sport issue, or is it just this particular interaction? Because I've tried to do some digging. I've tried to look into who this guy is and how long he's been doing this and what have you. I can't find his age, but it does look like he is at least as old as I am, which is 46. And I don't know about anybody else on this panel, but this is not something I would do to a female, let alone a female athlete, let alone someone who is potentially half my age. This just seems entirely cringy. And he then proceeded to try and apologize, both on Twitter and by writing a column which you had to click on in order to read, so thereby generating himself more online clicks, which is also kind of cringy. So I'm curious what everyone else's feeling on this is, because I feel like I need to take a hot shower after seeing this whole thing.
You are accurate in how that makes me feel as well. What's interesting is the what was said after he made the heart shape was Caitlin responded by saying, "Do you like that?" And he responded with, "Only if you keep doing that to me."
Yeah.
Meaning he wants her to start giving him the heart emoji when answering questions and asking questions. Like, I just...
What are you, stupid?
It's...
He's
yeah, I mean, but at the end of the day, unfortunately, I, like, brutally honest, some men are that dumb. Like, I don't get it. Because, like, women, whether they're athletes or not, all the time, every single day, are just, they get asked the worst questions.
Or they're they get spoken unprofessional. To, like, they're dumb or...
Yeah, and it's, you don't see it happening to male athletes. It's I don't know what to do about it, because, I mean, what do you do? That guy got the job that he's in, and he's... Mm-hmm. Got the green light to ask questions, and then he takes the opportunity
to
with
do
that kind of content. It's just, I don't understand it, because it makes, as a woman myself, it's just, you have now just made someone extremely uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now someone feels unsafe in a space where they're supposed to be celebrated in that moment.
Absolutely. It's supposed to be her welcome to the city. It's supposed to be her welcome to the team. It's supposed to be like, look at this amazing athlete we just drafted. And this guy does this. And the thing that kills me is this is not his first gig. He worked for CBS Sports as a national writer. How? When you are this unprofessional? How? It just...
So,
I don't know. I'm so creeped out by it. And it wasn't even me it was done to.
So... for those of you who may not know who I am, what I am, all those things, I'm a person with a visual impairment. So when I saw the video and then the interaction verbally, I thought a whole different thing had transpired. I thought when she sat down, she did, because she does the heart emoji thing with her family, I thought she was just doing it as a symbol of like, hey, I've been drafted. I'm sitting down. I had no clue that that this man started this with a heart emoji to her. Okay, that had no idea. I went into this segment under a totally different understanding, perception of what took place. Like, this is just gross beyond, like,
call you, it as it is, absolutely.
Like, again, we talked about, you know, pulling back the curtain. We had to restart what we were just talking about because, again, I was led under a totally different viewpoint from watching the video because of the verbal interactions of what took place. That, like, now knowing what took place, I'm just like, how, as a reporter, you want to talk about not, valuing your job? There's option number two right there, being on the board, sticking up there. Like, it's just like, ew, like, just what are you doing? Like,
yeah,
this is not appropriate. This is this woman's, day in the limelight, even though she's had the limelight with college for a long time, and you have to do that. Like, what? Why do women...
How does someone like that stay in that position as well?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I...
Like, I don't know any information as if to what consequence he has had.
None, as far as I know.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't seen none. The fire.
Blows my mind.
Because he apologized, which was even more cringy, quite frankly. If I can find it, I'll read it to everybody. But
if I was Caitlin Clark, I would specifically ask for him not to be allowed in any media room that I'm now going to be in.
Oh, absolutely. I feel this exactly the same way. Like, you have just made it incredibly uncomfortable for her. And you've made every reporter in this room look guilty by association because you can't do your job professionally. It's just unreal.
Kudos to Caitlin Clark because she just stumbled as professionally and as graciously as she could and just said, okay, I guess this is how I'll handle this. You like that? Yeah, it's something I do with my family, moving on. And then he had to double down and said, well, I'd like it if you continued to do it, like, to do with me. Like, buddy, just pump the brakes after the first part. Yeah, and then you had to double down and go, oh yeah, let's just continue to do that for me and we get along just great. No, I want nothing to do with you. Like, get out of my media room. Like, just gross. And like, this isn't the first time in media where you've seen, reporters on the tennis court make people do the twirl because of the pretty dress they're in. And like, we're not talking about the things people are wearing, the things people do with their family out of total innocency. And it's just something cute. And then you turn it into that. Like, why, people? Like, why are we doing this? Like, hold yourself to a better standard. Josh, I don't know if you were going to react to the twirl or if you were just reacting as I spoke, but go ahead.
Well, I react to all of it. Like, anything that makes light of or in some way treats an athlete who happens to be female differently than a male athlete, to me, is just wrong and inappropriate. I did find his quote unquote apology. He said, "Today, in my uniquely oafish way, while welcoming Caitlin Clark to Indy, I formed my hands into her signature heart," Doyle wrote. "My comment afterward was clumsy and awkward. I sincerely apologize. Please know my heart, literally and figuratively, was well-intentioned. I will do better." Really? Because if it was up to me, you wouldn't have a chance. You'd have been removed from that press conference immediately, and you would not have a press pass.
Yeah, I'm floored that this guy still has a job. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's unreal. It's absolutely unreal.
The part where he loses all, like, beyond the actual thing that happened, because that is where he loses the first level of all credibility. But for me, the second part is, it was well intended, and my heart was well intended. Okay, even if we took that aside and said that the motion was well intended, stop there. Stop. Like, you, okay, we can all get around the fact that maybe you were clumsy, maybe that if you just made the heart motion and you just were trying to just, you know, meet with her on a level. Where I get really grossed out is the, if you continue to do that to me, we'll get along just great. That's where it gets to the part where you're just like, buddy, that's gross beyond.
That's bordering on sexual harassment.
Yeah. And so.
Absolutely.
For me, that's where I'm just like, buddy, just stop.
And I go back to the fact that if my research is correct, and it may not be, but I think I read that he went to high school in the 80s, late 80s. That would make him older than me. That's even worse. The girl is 22.
It doesn't matter.
You just don't do that.
I understand, Josh, where you're coming from with the age thing, but it doesn't matter the age. If I did that at 30, I'm older than 30. I should not go back further. But if I did that in my mid 30s, that's still as gross as a guy who did it in his late 50s, early 60s. It's not appropriate.
Just
for me, the gross factor goes up because of the age difference. Like, I understand that there are people who are attracted to older and younger, and that's fine as long as it's consenting. But she did not consent to this.
No. Claire, there's things we often, you know, bring you in to discuss about in this situation, because
aren't you lucky?
You are a female, but the other side of this is you are also a mother, and I know you're a mother of a boy, and so the situation is not entirely the same. But what's your reaction? I want you to put on your parent hat here. If you are the parents of Caitlin Clark, how do you deal with this? Like, what's step one to help Caitlin Clark through this process?
Well, first off, I would just let her know that she did handle it very professionally and gracefully, which doesn't have to be her automatic reaction. When someone is making you feel uncomfortable, you're allowed to let them know, no matter what platform you're using. Moving forward, I mean, she is an adult, and as a parent, yes, you want to swoop in and fix the problem for them. I don't think that's the answer here. They can definitely help find what options she has. Like I mentioned, if she does have the option of making sure that specific individual isn't in any media rooms for her career, I absolutely think that she would have that as an option. I would just try to support her and let her know that she handled it well, and try to do the best in making sure that other people can learn from this situation as well. And I'm grateful for Josh for bringing this up this week, because it definitely needs to be spoken about much more. And the only way that people like this interviewer can do is learn from your mistakes. If he truly realizes the mistake that he made, okay, yes, you apologized, but apologies are nothing if you don't fix your actions. So hopefully moving forward, that not only him, but other reporters are now seeing, which they should have been seeing up until now, because it's been a thing happening to female athletes for quite some time, that it's unacceptable. And we are in a time, and women have a place right now and a platform to say, we will not put up with this. And I think that they should start putting that in place and making decisions of who is actually allowed to ask these female athletes these questions.
Josh, I have a specific direction to which I want to ask you.
Sure.
I understand that we're all here, you know, suggesting that Mr. Doyle is his own person and his own actions become at mm-hmm. the cost of himself. Yes. But is there a point, if you're Caitlin, where you look at this and say, is this the organization that I want to be a part of? And because this is my first initial moment with him, and understand that I recognize that Mr. Doyle is his own person, but this mm-hmm. is in the introductory stage of her career. Does that mm-hmm. cross your mind if you're Caitlin Clark? Because it certainly would mine.
I think I don't judge the Indiana Fever based on him. What I judge is the Indianapolis Star, the place he works. Because what kind of a newspaper are you? What kind of a view of me am I going to get from you if this is the kind of individual that you hire? And so I think if you're Caitlin, you speak to people within the organization and within the media department, and you say, okay, how do we deal with this? How do we make sure that this guy knows this is not appropriate and I will not tolerate this? Which I assume she did. Because you have to you you have to draw a line at some point. And you have to say, this is not acceptable. I am not going to accept this. If you do this again, I will not speak to you.
Absolutely. And that's where I think, Brock, where you're thinking is that I hope that the Indiana Fever are going to work diligently with Caitlin, but also as an organization as a whole, to make sure that that doesn't happen again. Or if it does happen again, it's being dealt with right away. And we're not sitting around here having a conversation of, well, what's the consequence here?
Yeah. Was there any? Because I don't think there was.
It doesn't seem like there is. And it's just, what are they going to do about it when and if this happens again?
Yeah, I mean, I look at this and say, you know, do we have to get to a point where somebody's got to vet the questions that the reporter is going to ask? And I would hesitate to say that that question or that exchange was written in like, I don't think that was scripted, but we have guests who come on every week or every few weeks, and sure, my panel, you know, overtly looks through from my Dragon Naturally Speaking moments where it just adds words and where they shouldn't be, and they kind of vet there. But I just don't know that we need to get to a point where it's like, what are you going to ask, especially in a moment like that? Because it's, you can't tell me that was scripted. You can't tell me that was on a piece of paper. I'm going to ask Caitlin Clark about heart emoji. Even if that was written on a piece of paper, no one's going to go there and think this is what the man's going to say based on that, Claire. At least I would hope not.
Yes, and there's context. You got to, like, it's... Even if it was a planned question or not, there's always a right way and a wrong way to ask a question. You can, he chose the wrong way to format a question. And then he followed it up with an even worse comment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I think, again, Brock, I think you're right in that it all depends on how she takes it, because I don't think anybody, at least I didn't see anything further from her about how she felt about it, which is probably understandable. She probably just wants to sweep it under the rug and forget that it ever happened. But I think it depends on if you, as the female athlete, are willing to give someone the benefit of the doubt. Are you willing to believe that they sincerely made a mistake? Because if you are, then I don't think you judge the organization, the newspaper, or even the city based on this one person. I mean, she is from Iowa. She was born there. She went to school there. So I think she's used to a small town, small city kind of view of the world, so to speak. That
Fair
doesn't
enough.
Make it right.
Yeah. Yes,
doesn't make
correct.
It right, but I think she could probably just kind of go, oh, well, that was weird, and move on. But I think it's on the organization and on the employer to take Mr. Doyle aside and say, okay, we are not going to do that again. And here's why. I mean, if he is oafish, as he puts it, that's fine. You can make a mistake. But when you make a mistake on that stage, I don't know how you even face that again, quite honestly. I don't know. I really don't know. Every time I hear a question like that towards a female athlete, I just automatically cringe, because I wasn't raised to speak to a woman like that. So why should someone else? And I think I even said to Brock when I brought this forward, he's lucky I wasn't in the room, because I would have picked him up by the scruff of his shirt and dragged him out of there. And he would have been against a wall somewhere being told, possibly with or without physicality, you will not do that again. Because it's so inappropriate.
I mean, I look at this and we often say that, you know, women are strong people. But like, if I was a woman, there is no way that I'm just like, oh yeah, I'll just put that under the, like, I'm losing my mind if that's me. Like, I'm not just letting that pass over and just being like, oh yeah, okay, I just won't get a question from him, and if I do, I hold my breath and move on. Like, that's the level to which I go, yeah, no, we're not dealing with that. And so for women that have sadly tolerated this kind of behavior, like, you guys are stronger people than we think, because there is a lot of situations where if I was treated like that in the media, I'd be like, oh no, buddy, you're not gonna ask me that kind of question again. And just the way that she handled that, and other women have handled different circumstances, I just think, wow, you guys are stronger. And it shows time and time again. Claire, as the woman on this panel, before we move on to the NHL for a bit, final thoughts.
I just appreciate that there's guys like you guys out here that are having the conversations about it and putting that standard out there, because it's, like I said, it's people learn from other people, and it's in those crucial moments of who actually speaks up and says, no, this isn't okay. So I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, we will always shed the light, even if I had a plan to tell the story myself, and then we had to revert back and do it a bit differently. But that's because I saw it and heard it differently. And so thank you to Josh, who brought this forth and also, you know, brought the story to the table. And then I just kind of took the wheel from there. And having said that, I'm going to take the wheel and move it into a different discussion, because we can't discuss this anymore. It was wrong and we should just move on. Let's talk a little bit about the NHL playoffs. We know that Edmonton, Vancouver, Winnipeg, and Toronto are in the East for the playoffs. We also know that, sorry, hang on one second. We know that Edmonton, Vancouver, Winnipeg are in the playoffs, and in the East, it is simply the Toronto Maple Leafs that are in the playoffs. Thoughts from you guys? Who do you like for the playoffs? What do you think? Josh, start with you.
Going into the playoffs, I would have told you that I like the chances of Edmonton and Vancouver the best. But as we have recorded this, we have seen a few games, and I really like the chances of the Winnipeg Jets after what I saw. And I like the brand of hockey that they play. It's not to say that they're going to make the Stanley Cup final or anything like that. In fact, I don't have them making the Stanley Cup final. But I think they're going to do well against Colorado, and they might even make it to the second round, which I would have told you before we started this that I didn't think that. I also would have told you that I think Toronto is going to either make it to the second round or at least take Boston to seven games. I think we all saw the debacle that was game one of Boston versus Toronto. It was not pretty for Toronto. So we will see what happens. And I'm concerned about William Nylander because he's just disappeared. And there's no news about what's wrong, what's going on. Only that he's trying to play. Well, if you're trying to play, what have you been hiding for the last number of weeks? Because an injury like that doesn't just pop up out of nowhere. Whatever that injury is, because no one will say.
Yeah, the question mark around Nylander is the interesting one. Without the Nylander, he's one of their main guys. He's shows up, he's consistent, and he's reliable. So to not have him really puts a dent in. But I think where they shot themselves in the foot in game one is they changed the way that they played. They went into that game trying to be a lot more physical than they are, and it got them in trouble. Making mistakes and putting yourself out of position just to make a big hit isn't how they've been playing all season. And it was really interesting because they got into the playoffs and they got to where they are, both individually with players and as a team, playing the way that they've played all season. And I think that if they went in playing that same game, that game one would have been at least a lot closer. And Winnipeg is definitely one of the teams that, one, I was excited that got into the playoffs, and one that I thought could maybe not make a long run, but make one that people are going to pay attention to. And the fact that they got Colorado right off the bat is interesting, and how they played against a team like Colorado was really exciting to watch. I mean, fast, physical, good defense, great goaltending, already like save of the year candidates. Just, I'm so excited to watch Winnipeg and see what they can do. And we all have high expectations for Edmonton every year, same as we do with Toronto. So if they can stay healthy and play the same hockey that they've been playing, I think they can also make it interesting. But it was exciting to see Vancouver back on their home ice in quite some time in a playoff game with people in the crowd. Their last playoff run was in the bubble without anybody in the crowd. So it was nice to see Vancouver have some fans in the crowd starting off a playoff series. But yeah, I think Winnipeg is currently the strongest Canadian team in the playoffs right now. But as we stand right now, we still have a few more games for the other Canadian teams. So
can we just purely relax about game ones? Like, I think there is a portion of people who like to kick the poop out of Toronto just for kicking the poop out of Toronto. Mm-hmm. I didn't like what I saw, sure, but everything I saw on social media afterwards was like, here we go again. And did I share that same sentiment? Sure. But it's like people just have nothing better to do than talk about the crap that we have to deal with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Can we judge this when the 7-game series is over, please? Instead of literally just taking one game and literally micro managing it, looking at it, and like, can we just wait until the 7-game series is done? And I'm not suggesting that they're even going to win the 7-game series. All right, this is, but can we just let the story be written before we write the story, please? Because it's just not.
You know what? The terrible part about these comments is there's a good portion of them that are coming from Toronto Maple Leaf fans. It's,
I know.
It's so wild to see every year. And like, how do you expect a team to respond positively to something like that? It's just, it blows my mind how the fans here sometimes react.
Yeah. And I just want to make a quick remark too over Winnipeg. Like, you guys got a bit lucky in the goaltending situation with Georgiev. Like, when Colorado scores 6 and you score 7, like, that's not going to happen in a playoff series very often. If a team scores 6 goals in a playoff game, that should be it. Should be jam, done, should be over. Okay? Mm-hmm. Winnipeg seems to have Georgiev's number in that they keep beating him over and over again. That's a problem because Colorado doesn't have much beyond that. Right. So it's, that's a thing. And sometimes with goaltenders especially, you can look at it and say, you picked a tendency, sure. But that goaltender has the entitlement to, I don't know, Josh, adjust, figure it out. So I suspect game two, you're not going to see a 7-6 game. At least according to the coaching staff, you're not going to see a 7-6 game.
Well, and that's the funny thing. We as fans, we love a 7-6 game. That was an exciting game. You can bet that there was not a hair left in place on either coach's head by the end of that game. And you can bet that teams will be getting a hard skate today.
Oh, yeah, it was an exciting game. But for Winnipeg to go up 3 goals and then almost
give it back.
Almost have that game tied and lost. It's nothing. It's you got the W, and you have the one game up on the series now. But it's as a coaching staff, you're not. It's not a good.
That's not how
it's not
it was
a good
drawn
locker
up.
Room after a game like that.
No, and just on your point about the judging after game one, I hear you, and I understand, and I will judge after the series is over. However, I would argue that this is a result of a team that hasn't won a cup in 60 years. And this is a product of a media market that constantly nitpicks on everything. And there were habits that I saw, Mr. Domi, going to the penalty box multiple times, that cannot continue if we're going to have a different result.
And that's the thing. They went in trying to be overly physical. But right. You can be a physical team and still play clean.
Exactly.
Domi wasn't playing clean. He was using his stick as a weapon. And he was, I would have benched him.
He was slashing Marchand off the opening faceoff.
Yeah, he wouldn't have played probably the third period if I was behind the bench.
Yeah, and the problem with that is who else do you put in there? You can't put Ryan Reeves on that line because unfortunately he's just not strong enough a player. That line has been good for them for probably 6 weeks, but that game, everybody let their emotions get the best of them. Now, I agree with you, Brock. We are probably going to see vastly different games in game two. We often do. And that's great. But if Toronto continues to make the mistakes they made, they're not going to proceed. Same as Winnipeg is not going to proceed if they continue to give up 6 goals. And that's not on Connor Hellebuyck. That's on the guys in front of him, speaking as the goaltender in the room. Your goalie can only do so much for you. And then it's like, well, there were 5 of you he had to get through first.
And to wrap up the show, because as per normal, we've gone over time, which I tend to do on a podcast. But we've got 4 Canadian teams. I'm not asking for who. I'm not asking any of those details. By the time we record next week, how many are still remained out of those 4 teams? And if you want to go further and say who, go ahead, but I'm not saying you have to. Claire, go first.
I don't think any of the Canadian teams loses a series for nothing. I don't think any of these teams are going to get swept or win a series in 4 either. I think this time next week, we might still be talking about these same teams and what they're doing in those series.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think we might see 1, maybe 2 on the brink, but I don't necessarily know that we're going to have anybody eliminated. Because I don't think enough games will have been played in the series by that point. Because as you said, I don't think anybody's going to get swept. But I think there might be some 3-1 teams by the time we come back.
Well, that's where I'm gonna be the difference in the different take in the room. I think we're losing one team. I think the one team. I'm not gonna say, but you can probably figure it out. I think we're losing one, and I think there's gonna be some heads that will roll because of it. Sadly, I have it in my gut and in my feels that this is just gonna be the same thing over and over again, and yet we're gonna have to dissect what happened, what now, what unfortunately, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope this particular team, you know, ties it up and we move on to a whole different thing. But I just, in my feels, it's not looking good from what I saw in game one. That is the end of our program for this week. Thank you so much for sticking around with us, as we often always appreciate your listenership. Be sure to tune in next week, because CBC's Devin Haru will be joining us, and I have a ton of questions, because that guy is like a Swiss Army knife and we can go anywhere. I'd like to thank Josh Watson, Claire Buchanan. I'd also like to thank our technical producer, Mark Afolo. Be sure to tune in next week. Be safe, be well.
The Neutral Zone is brought to you by the Ontario Para Network. Connect with them at ON Para Network. Follow them online at onpara.ca. Now that's a winning combination.